Into sports.
20 yards out, Urch to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No.
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports. Ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
All right, it's just gone 8 o'clock on this Wednesday evening. Adrian with you this evening. Hope all is well wherever it is you are. Do keep your comments coming into us. Plenty of people exercised by the utterances of Bradley Wiggins today. We are going to hear a little bit more of cycling to come. Stephen Barrett, who's a trainer and performance scientist with the French professional cycling team, was in conversation with the lads on AM earlier today, and we're going to hear a little snippet of that to come this hour. We've also got the football show in the company of Andy Mitten, and some interesting developments as well, by the way, in that Jadon Sancho to Manchester United deal this evening, in that it appears, though, it may well be very much back on. Andy Minton is very much also somebody who will be able to give us the inside scoop, and we'll get that for you in the football show a little bit later, and as well run the rule over all things Manchester United ahead of the start of the new season, as is the case for Liverpool, in the company of Mark Lawrenson. So that's all coming your way just after 9 o'clock. So that's all to come. Do keep your comments coming into us. And a very special item upcoming now for GAA supporters everywhere, I think, and indeed beyond. It's 25 years, would you believe, on from Clare being reunited with their missing person, beating Offaly in that 1995 All-Ireland Hurling Final. We're going to reflect on it in the company of two legends, Anthony Daly and Jamesy O'Connor, in just a minute. But first, let's remind ourselves what it was all about.
There's been a missing person in Clare for 81 long years.
Ger, how in your wildest dreams could you have said on the day of the league defeat, we'll win the Munster Championship?
Even though we were beaten, we did play fairly well on that day. It was a Munster Championship type day, and I felt after that we had a great chance of winning the Munster Championship, especially because there was nobody in Munster to compare with that Kilkenny team.
Plays it to O'Connor. O'Connor looking for the lead point for Clare. What they did in 93, can they do again in 95? PJ O'Connor draws the loud cheers of the Clare following, his second point.
The Munster final this year was the pressure game of the year for us. I mean, if we had been the team who had lost three Munster finals in a row, particularly for myself, if I was the person that had captained Clare to lose in three Munster finals, I think it would have been very hard to come back again after that. For a lot of us, I think.
It's strange for a goalie to take it, but it doesn't matter. I suppose if he scores, they'll be delighted.
Remember John Commons in the 1986 All-Ireland Final. David Fitzgerald, here's the goal shot starting for Clare. He scored! Well, Clare have won it! The Clare half forward line during the first half. Ollie Baker in there manfully against Michael Coleman. Runs back towards Fergal Hagert. He has the presence of mind to pick out Anthony Daly. We await the first score of the second half. Conor Clancy, maybe the provider. Nicely inside the Fergie Toohey. Towards Gerard Loughlin. At the first point of the first half. It's a goal!
Yes, political faces in the crowd here at Croke Park have enjoyed that. The dancers then finishing up with what was appropriately called the friendship set between Offaly and Clare. Did you enjoy that, Gerard? That was good stuff.
That's free, is swung in there, batted down by the goalkeeper. It's a goal! It's a goal by Emma Trapp! Clare are in front!
Here's Marty.
Gerard Loughnane, what did you say to your team at half-time?
Well, we have played as well as we could in the first half. However, we've been against the wind. So now the game is going to be won now in the next 35 minutes, and I've just asked him to give him that last down for Clare for these 35 minutes.
You think you're
going to
do it?
We're going to do it.
Here's the 65 from Anthony Daly. Where's it going? Over the bar! The captain has put his side in front, and Clare are just about to win. They've won! Clare have won the All-Ireland! What a victory! A tribute to determination and no little craft. By Gerard Loughnane. He told us at half-time they'd do it. He said they'd win the Munster. They did. Eat your heart out, Biddy Early. Clare have done it by 2 points. 113 to 2-8.
Today, that person has been found alive and well. And that person's name is Liam McCarthy.
Absolutely magic stuff there. The montage worker, Richie McCormack, Anthony Daly, Jamesy O'Connor, come on in. How are you doing?
Hi, Adrian.
How are you doing, Dan?
Good, Adrian.
I don't know. I'm not from Clare. I have no connections to Clare at all, and I'm feeling a bit teary-eyed after that. How does it feel, Anthony, listening back to that 25 years on?
Yeah, Adrian, sure. It's hard to believe it's 25 years in one way, and then other, you think of events that have gone on in 25 years, and you do feel like it's a long time. But yeah, it's still very clear in the memory, I must say, a lot of it. And that was one of the things I think we consciously maybe made a bit of a pact that we would remember things like the homecoming, and, you know, we weren't going to get off our heads too early in the week and, you know, enjoy the homecoming, take it all in. It might never happen again. Thankfully it did, but yeah, it was magic. It's hard to believe 25 years, Adrian, yeah.
And what's the main thing for you, Anthony? Like, are you nostalgic, content, wistful? Like, what's the main emotion for you this week?
You know, I'll tell you the truth, like, you know, these anniversaries and that just, you know, it is really just that is in the kind of stockpile, Adrian, that we did what we dreamed about as children, I suppose, that we'd play for Clare and if possible win in All-Ireland, and people would have told us we were mad. But thank God, enough people maybe believe in the group and we got there. So that's kind of the 25-year thing. We had great plans for the year. We should have, did nearly be over and done with now, as James will tell you. Like, we got free suits, Adrian, and we were going to have a great weekend in Dublin, and we'll have to get free overcoats now if they bring us out in December anyway. So
I'd say December is optimistic.
Yeah, well, I think we will have an All-Ireland, so whether there'll be a crowd there to be waving to, but sure, we'll be able to wave to the cameras and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. I was actually looking back at the footage earlier. I think it was the Cork team that were out for when you won it that year. Jamesy, what about you when you think about 95 specifically? What are the main things that jump straight into your mind?
Sure, I suppose, Adrian, they were the time of our lives, really. You know, as Dale said, we've been beaten in the two Munster finals, I suppose, in 93 and 94. And if anything, I suppose the Cork game was the first, the Munster semi-final. And, you know, we didn't play particularly well. And, you know, I shudder to think, like, that if we'd lost that game, you know, how we'd have possibly gone back to the drawing board, given how hard we trained. I mean, that was a sobering thought. But, you know, we managed to get over the line. Frank Logan made an unbelievable block at the end of the match. I think it was Kevin Murray there. And obviously, Shawnee had broken the collarbone, and we'd subs on. And you know, he won a line ball, or forced a line ball. And Fergie Toohey, who I've said had no business been anywhere near taking a line ball, landed inside the square. And Baker, who equally had no business been anywhere in there, managed to get on the end of it and put it into the net. And we got out of jail. And I think we felt that, look at, back in the third Munster final, like, we couldn't possibly contemplate losing. And it was Limerick, and maybe, look at, they beat us well in 94 and maybe underestimated us. And that's really, I suppose, one of the great memories, because the Munster final was so special a day, and we played so well when we finally maybe got the monkey off our backs, whatever. And I think a lot of credit has to go to Loughnane, Adrian, for not settling for Munster. Do you know what I mean? He sensed you know, that maybe there was more there for us, and you know, tore strips out of us, I'd say, before a week after the Munster final, ahead of the Galway game. There's a famous story, Dale, I'd tell it, about Stephen Mack in the dressing room, you know, been sick before a training session, and Dale, I'd tell it better than I do. But I mean, it was just, you know, to beat Galway in the semi-final and then get to the final, I mean, sure, it was roller coaster, rider over stuff, and then to go and win it, you know, was beyond our wildest dreams or expectations. So yeah, hard to believe 25 years have passed, but great memories, and as Delo said, like, you know, we had a good weekend planned, and yeah, you know, sure, hopefully at some point we get the opportunity to get together as a group, because it doesn't happen that often, you know.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, James, we're going to let you off there and just try and get that line fixed, and we'll come back to you. We'll get you back up and get onto it. But you've teed Anthony up nicely for a yarn about Stephen McNamara that trying to deal with pre-match, was it?
Oh, no. It was, we celebrated well after Munster, Adrian, because we possibly took a bunch of players. That was as good as it was going to get, you know. So training was poor. We were slogging for a couple of nights, and then eventually we were back hurling in Cusick Park, and the match was chronic bad, you know. So the whistle blew, and all into the dressing room, and he absolutely savaged into us. And poor old Stevie Mack had just come into training and had been off work with a sick stomach. And, you know, you probably didn't dare ring in to say you missed training and you might try with work. But he came in and eventually came around to Mack as he savaged us all one by one. And he said, he hit him kind of let's say a dig in the stomach. And said, "Mack, sick is coming out of Croke Park beaten." So I think, you know, after that, we went back out and fairly tore into each other in the match. And the tone was just set, as James, he said. And I'd agree with him that was, Adrian, that was a massive feat of management to get our feet back on the ground, because we weren't a Mayo or, let's say, a Limerick even, who had been losing all Ireland finals. We couldn't win Munster, you know. So for us, the achievement was nearly, we bridged a 63-year gap from 32. But to get us back down and say this is a chance and go all the way, that was a great feat of management.
And like, even in terms of that then, Anthony, were you talking about that at the start of the year? Like, what was the chat? Was it about winning Munster? As you say, you'd been there a couple of years. Were you fixed on the All-Ireland? Or like, yeah, what was the context of that year for you?
Well, the context would have been like, Len would have been with us in Gaynor for 4 years, and I was there like when Len came in right at the get-go, and it was so low you wouldn't believe it, Adrian, and he lifted it so much. But then I suppose Gerard had come in with him in 94 on the basis that he'd take over in 95, and that happened, and then the training was gone to just brought in Mike Mack and Tony Considine, and like Mike Mack's physical training was just something we never experienced. Now look, I'm always conscious that there's athletes out there. I think I was listening to a lad yesterday even who had ran 200 kilometres in 24 hours. So look, which wasn't anything we were used to, I can tell you. You know, running up a hill in Shannon 35 times after maybe doing an hour and a half's body work down in Wolftone's clubhouse, or, you know, so it was different, and it was just focused on game to game, to be honest. There was no great, he was ahead of his time that way. I'd say, Gerard, we topped the league, got into the league final and flopped again. And we disagree about that. Some of the lads reckon that was great because we maybe thought everything was going swarmingly in 95, and that grounded us again. But for me, it was an absolute nightmare. I just thought we were just big day chokers. And it took me a good while I think we just had to get lucky against Cork that day to get back into the Munster final. And when we did, we were determined to perform at least, Adrian, anyway. Do you know, you'd no guarantee a win in hurling matches. Limerick were very unlucky not to win the All-Ireland the previous year. So we just had to go down, though, and stand. Like, we'd been hammered in the previous two, hammered in the league final. So we had to stand, and in fairness, we did. And then Limerick probably, as James said, maybe not quite ready for the challenge that met them. So, you know, that was the day of days for us, because, as I said, they were the days we were losing constantly.
And it's easy to see, like, after given everything that you say that had gone before in terms of not, the result not going your way on the day. And, like, you hear, you're saying, like, you're thinking after that Kilkenny League final that we're just a team of chokers. But you hear Gerlach Nan coming out saying that's enough evidence for him now. And you heard it in the clip there. He's saying, that's it. We can win Munster. So when you hear that, given that your mindset is somewhere else, what are you thinking, or how do you get yourself back on track?
Well, I tell you the truth, Adrian, like, five of us probably in the Sparrows car from Clarecastle. The only one of us that had played well was Stephen Sheedy, who subsequently got hurt after Dunne's Cruciate after 13 minutes, I think, against Cork. He was the only one that played okay against Kilkenny, and it wasn't a word spoken, I think, walking to the car. And I said, I was in the front seat, I said, "What do you make of that about winning Munster?" Sparrow just looked across at me and put the eyes up to heaven, like, you know, as if, you know, this isn't going to happen. Now, he'd been around 3 or 4 years longer than the likes of myself, and probably 5 years longer than the likes of James. I found it hard to take it in, I have to say. But look, it was just a matter of getting back, knuckling down. And
would you have spoken to him about it, Anthony, or would you just let it away? Or would you have said, "Listen, what are you on about?" Or how would that have come out within the panel?
Oh, geez, no, like, it was very much like kind of a bit of a, what we'd perceive goes on in Kilkenny with our setup around then, to be honest. Like, I might get a small bit of license as captain to maybe bring something to them that the panel was concerned about, but
okay,
you wouldn't be questioning stuff like that. If he told you he believed we'd win Munster, we believed we'd win Munster, if you know what I mean. But inside yourself, did you really believe it? I'm not so sure, but maybe coming out of the Gaelic grounds, all right, yeah, because the last 5 minutes in that Munster semi-final were mad, just crazy stuff, like, to concede a goal, get a goal, and then take one literally off the goal line, Frank Lowe, and win. Mm. You know, maybe things were beginning to turn for us, and we really believed going into the Munster final that we were really going to put up a big one, I think.
Does that all ring true for you, Jamesy?
Yeah, I mean, Adrian, I think like the younger players in the Pens anyway, you know, wouldn't have had the same baggage as maybe Sparrowhead, because, you know, some of us had won, you know, minor in 89, we'd been in a minor final in 90, we'd had success with Flannans, we, you know, probably felt we should have won the 21 in 92, you know, Watford beat us in the final, and I remember actually we topped the league, and we were off, I think, in the quarter final, we'd weekend off, and we went down to Killarney, and Taylor, I'll tell you, we had a great weekend down there. Mm. But I was rooming with Brian Lohan, and I remember, you know, we were out sure for you know, on the town or whatever, and we came back, and it was late at the night, and we were just chatting, and I just said to him, look, would you ever think you could be like Sarah Lyons or Jim McInerney and hurl for Clare for 10 or 15 years and never actually win it? And then I remember Lohan saying, like, through gritted teeth, I said that we'll win something, we'll be successful. And I remember going to bed that night thinking, you know, he's dead right, like, that there's talent in that dressing room, and the fellas with character, and you know, we had a management team that was as good, if not better, than anyone in the country. And I felt we were definitely going the right direction. And, we maybe got out of jail against Cork a little bit, but there was other factors there. You know, Frank Lowe, I think, had been doing exams. I think he didn't start. Baker didn't start. And we all maybe realise now the force of nature that he became and how important he was to the team. And Stephen Sheedy, as Dale said, was a loss as well, but Stephen Mack came into the team, and we probably finished maybe with our best 15 on the field against Cork. And I think, as Dale said, once we got to the Munster final, you couldn't contemplate losing a third, you know, and we were just, I suppose, really maybe our best hurling was ahead of us rather than behind us. And you know, obviously the Munster final, as Dale said, was set up for us, you know, underdogs, in a great position at half time. And that was really the thing. Like, I mean, remember Lognan's last word before we left the dressing room was no surrender, that we weren't going to balk and lie down. Whatever else, we'd go down and we'd die with our boots on. And there was a resolve and I think a resilience gone out in the second half that we were really, there was no step backwards. And we just maybe hurled and expressed ourselves and got on a roll. And as Dalo said, like, that was the special one, because it was 63 years and it was all we'd ever spoken about. And, you know, it was the real diehard Clare supporters in Thurles that they probably outnumbered maybe 3 or 4 to 1 by Limerick. So to win that was massive. And then, you know, we just obviously freewheeled a bit after that.
That no surrender was at halftime in the Cork game?
No, halftime in the Munster final. I mean, I remember we were in the dressing room, and people spoke, I think, about maybe 78, I think it was, where, you know, they were right there at halftime with Cork, I think. And there was a real sense of expectation in the crowd that this was it now. This was the opportunity. And you know, I think it was their sending off in 78 or whatever, Jim Power sent off. And you know, they came up maybe a couple of points short. And some people said that to me afterwards, that there was that same sense of expectation that, you know, it was there for us. It was just a question as to whether we had the bottle to actually turn up and produce what was required in the second half. And as I said, Lognan probably sensed that himself. And as I said, I just remember, like, that going out at halftime that day, we weren't going to come back defeated. And I just remember his last 2 words was no surrender. And I remember going out anyway, you know, prepared to take the door off the hinges as every other man that just was, that we weren't going to come back you know, beaten and you know, having folded. Like, if they were better than us, they were better. But there was, in Lognan's words, there wasn't going to be a surrender. And there were plenty of career surrenders, and we'd been part of it in 93, 94, Dale and myself in the past. But that wasn't going to happen on that day. And look, we produced the good in the second half and played really well. It was great to win, I suppose, and know maybe the last few minutes that, look, the job was done and it was in the bag.
Maybe that point about the no surrender, Anthony, is the key to this one. But, like, people, you often hear this cliche, obviously, in sport about, well, you need to lose them to win them. What, for you, was it the losing of them that got you over the line, or was it the experience of playing in them?
I don't know that for sure, Adrian. Tis, I should know after 25 years, but I wasn't as confident as James and Brian Lohan and these lads. You know, I had been through, I came in there, you know, 1989, like, you know, I was a minor in 87, and I, terrible few years, like the first few years, you know, so, and I had watched the boys come, and I knew there was talent coming, but I just wondered, would I be around for it nearly at that stage? So, no, I think what helped was that we just felt that we had underachieved and let ourselves and our people down, and that couldn't happen again. So that was the big thing coming into it. I remember going in along on the bus with PJ O'Connell, and he had played as well in the previous two, and he would have come on, he'd be maybe a year older than James as well, be in between the two of us. And he just said to me, well, if we lose today's one, that's it, I'm going back no more, and yeah, you know. And there was a sense with a few of the older heads, and I was only 25, you know, that might be the case. So it was in there, and maybe come home with our heads held high, you know, come home with our shields or on our shields, because we felt we came home without them the previous 2 years.
Right. That Killarney session was spoken about before as well, Anthony. When was that?
Well, I didn't recall. No, I knew to sometime in April, but James reckoned we topped the group, so we went straight to the semi-final. So that's about right. That tallies. We came back, like, it was great cracker in, and your man, we didn't even know he could sing a song, looking in, and all of a sudden, he it was a sing-song, sure. There was a few of us belting out a few bits of crack, and we took over some small pub and having good old crack, and we asked him for a song anyway. Of course, I'd say he'd have planned, you know. Tony Constantine now would be a noted singer, so he had kind of held court. And he burst into waltz in Matilda, you know, the famous Australian war song that Makem and Clancy and those that said made famous. And, you know, how they all went off to war on the boat, flag waving and cheers. But when they came home, you know, maimed and crippled, that there was no one, and they turned all their faces away. And remember, he said before he came to that line, and he had a few beers in him, like, you know, and he said, and remember, and they turned all their faces away. And like, I think, you know, even with a few pints on board, every one of us kind of looked at each other. It's like being in a huddle just before you go out the door of the dressing room or something, you know. It was a powerful moment on a relaxing weekend, or what was meant to be, but there was always an angle with him. And I suppose, Adrian, that was, he was a sports psychologist when there was wasn't any, really, you know.
Yeah, incredible, really. Because the reason it struck a note with me was, I don't know if you saw the Sean Boylan documentary a couple of weeks ago. His one was a bit later in the season, obviously, but he brought the 91 four games against Dublin, and he brought the team over to Scotland on the Raz in the middle of the, it was after the third game, I think, and then they came back, obviously, and won the fourth game. Not quite the same, Jamesy, but certainly something that, like, because the Anthony mentions about Mike Mackin, obviously the very famous sessions that he had, but it wasn't all hard work.
No, it wasn't. And I think, look at, you know, all the great managers, and I'd say Cody's the same, you know, the players need to maybe have that release valve or whatever, and get together as a, you know, in a social setting, whatever. And like, as Dalo said, 25 years on, Adrian, I still remember it. And literally the hair stood up on the back of your neck, and he had that ability, I suppose, to hold an audience or a room or a group of people in the palm of his hand. And I agree with Dalo. I mean, I think it was half planned. He knew exactly what he was doing. And as Dalo said, like, remember. And, you know, and I'd never heard the song sang the way he sang it. And I mean, it was the way he was able to sing. And you know, that was something I hadn't expected, but it was powerful. And it was, and look at it, it's maybe, you know, don't want to be bigging it up or overplaying it, but it was just one of those moments that you don't forget. And I suppose as a group, you know, we were tight, and we were getting tighter, and it was training hard the way we did under Mac, probably brought us closer. But that, I will never forget that weekend, and as I said, the chat with Lohan and that. And I remember actually, Dalo, that the Sunday morning, the Railway Cup was on in Dublin, and I know myself and Brian Lohan were on the panel, because we went to Dublin with Johnny Lee, who was a doctor based in Dublin, and look, it obviously couldn't maintain that kind of a commute or whatever. And I think Johnny left the panel, but Johnny brought myself and Lohan to Dublin. I think we might have come down maybe with yourself, maybe, and Sparrow or someone else. But that weekend, yeah, I'll never forget it. It was important, I think.
And just on Jarrod, because there's one story that I definitely want to get to that I think might have been before the All-Ireland, and a Jack Charlton encounter that was recounted in a newspaper recently. I would definitely want to come to that at some point and get your take on that. But just on Jarrod himself, Anthony, before we leave that, because obviously such an important cog, and watching back some of the footage over the last 24 hours, like, it was so obvious the esteem with which, and that doesn't really fully explain it, I don't think, the word esteem, but the respect. But it just in terms of the relationship then inside, it seemed very much as if, from what you're saying, there was a clear delineation between, you know, his style of leadership was I'm over here and I'm telling you guys the way it's going to go and you get your stuff together. There was none of this sort of modern day kind of rule by democracy.
No, that wouldn't have been the way with him. And I suppose it was of its time too, though. You know, I don't really recall any managers before him, even with Lynn, like, while he might let you have a bit more of a say, like, Ger wasn't. I remember one time suggesting to him, no, this was well after 95, that we might watch the video of the game together or something. There was no video analysis, obviously. And he said, if you want to watch it, Dalo, and watch how bad you were again, he said. So it was one after one of the drawing games with Tip or Walford or somebody. So that's the answer I got. So, Adrian, I knew that, leave it at that, like, you know. So, yeah. No, that was the way it was. But, like, look, if you were, you know, he came in, he's first year manager, we win the All-Ireland, like, for the next 4 or 5 years, whatever he told us to do, we were willing to do it without a doubt.
Yeah, the Cork game you've touched on there and the importance of it, like it felt, even rewatching the last few minutes of it, Jesus, it felt like such an important moment almost in the history of the story of Clare hurling. Like that, you know, I think, was it Anthony mentioned about Shawnee McMahon? No, it wasn't Shawnee McMahon. Somebody took one from just underneath the post. Shawnee McMahon's going around with a dislocated shoulder, and somehow Ollie Baker pops up to knock it home. But like, is it overstating it to say that those few moments were amongst the most crucial and important in the history of Clare hurling?
That's absolutely, Adrian. And one thing I think as well that was, for me was important about that day. But Lagnan had been involved with the 21s in 92, and you know, we met a very, very good Waterford team. But we had been Munster minor champions 2 years previously, and this was, we were obviously kind of favourites, and we'd beaten Tip and beaten Limerick, you know, impressively to get there. And on the night, you know, it just didn't happen for us, and they made a lot of positional switches, and it was as if Lognan himself felt that, you know, he had to be detached and this cool personality on the sideline to be able to watch the game and distance himself from what was going on in the field and make the crucial moves. And there was an element of that, I think, about him maybe prior to the Cork game. But what I remember about the Cork game, and particularly the you know, at halftime, I think, in that game, he was very powerful. You know, I think he said at one stage, the ship has sprung a leak, but it's not going down. And in the second half, what I remember was Lognan just seemed to be everywhere. He was on the field, you know, you win a free, yeah, on the field, waving a fist in your face, driving you on. And for me, this is what Lognan should have been doing 3 or 4 years previously, because you fed off that energy and the force of his personality. And, you know, and he just seemed to be everywhere in the second half of that game. And I think from that point on, he realized that, look, he could, you know, see what was going on, but at the same time, be that presence that maybe, you know, we responded to. And as I just remember that was, I think, a transformation in his approach on game day itself. And yeah. I think certainly, you know, even if there's, obviously he had words with Shawnee about not going off, even though he'd broken his collarbone, and just, it was nearly force of will that got us over the line that day, as much as anything else. And as that, Adrian, I shudder to think what would have happened, given the way we trained and the effort we put in, if we'd lost that game by a point. I mean, it would have been fight, and thankfully we didn't.
Was there a, he could have made a sub, or?
I think it was three subs on at the time, wasn't it? I think, and we probably used all three at that stage, Dalo.
Yeah, that was it, yeah. And he just kind of went up to try and, as he say himself, Shawnee, just try and occupy a Cork corner back. And I think even Eamon Cregan was saying in his commentary that he'd get him out of that corner as the sideline cut has been taken. That he'd put him over to the other side. But luckily enough, Fergie too, he executed the sideline cut, the only one he ever took perfectly. And the rest is history, yeah. But yeah, all subs were on, Adrian. That's it.
Yeah, so. It's absolutely incredible. You don't see it now as a thing, obviously, and that's why it probably stands out so much. But we're going to skip forward now significantly, but in the lead into the All-Ireland final then and the Offaly game, and I mentioned a little while ago, Jared, an article in the Star a couple of weeks ago, and I don't know if you saw it, but it was around the time that Jack Charlton passed. I don't know if either you saw that or have recollections of it, or if could, rather than me butcher it, one of you could take it on.
I'll leave it to you, Taylor, because I have no recollection whatsoever of that story.
Well, to be honest, I only heard about it afterwards as well, Adrian. But what I remember about that morning was we used to fly up. Now, we used to fly up. I mean, this is our second time. The semi-final was the first time. But we flew up early. And what you do is you'd have your breakfast and you would go to bed then for a couple of hours. Now, some fellas found that torture. Some fellas, I used to share with Ali Baker, he could go into bed and sleep for 2 hours. You have to wake him for the warm-up. But anyway, the Irish team were staying in the same hotel out of the airport because they were going off to play, I think, a Euro qualifier on the Wednesday night. And coincidentally, they were down in UL doing a training camp the weekend we beat Cork. So Niall Quinn being a big GA man and Dennis Irwin being a big Cork man and Mick Byrne, obviously, the three of them just said to Jack, we're going into the match in the Gaelic grounds, or even the clue about it, I suppose. And so they went in, and then Niall Quinn, I remember Niall Quinn appearing around the door. I was sitting near the door and looking at him, went up to them, and he allowed him to talk. And it was Niall that did the talk. And he said, lads, we actually were there when you beat Cork. And myself, Mick and Dennis, and we saw you starting it, and Dennis wasn't too happy that day, but we're going as well today, and we'd love to see you finishing it. And that's what I remember about it. But by all accounts, the management room was down the long, and they'd set up Colin Flynn, the team kind of physio, masseuse, or whatever, you know, next door to them, and he was next door to Jack Charlton's room. But they told all the lads who wanted rubs and stuff, I suppose lads were extra nervous, maybe. I was down the room trying to pick out a lucky 15 while Baker was sleeping, maybe, or something like that. And look, what I heard was they were going to eventually Charlton just opened the door and just started shouting out at the lads, wrong room, you know. So I literally was oblivious to that as well. Like, that wasn't spoken about in the immediate aftermath. But the management, of course, are very much aware. And the few players that went down were told, go down to room, let's say 205. And there was Jack Charlton sitting in front of them. So you can imagine where that was after the previous few years of Irish soccer.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah, one thing I remember, Adrian, about the morning of that game, we'd meet in the Oakwood Arms Hotel in Shannon, and you know, just me collectively there, and get into a bus then, and we'd drive to the airport, and we'd be literally straight onto the tarmac and onto the plane or whatever. That everything else were great in that sense, and you know, tickets have been organised and whatever. But the bus drove around the back of the Oakwood, you know, kind of did a loop around the back, and you know, we'd done that before the Galway game, but suddenly we came, there was a gate, just a, you know, a regular, you know, field or farmer's gate or whatever, and the thing was locked, and someone said Lochnan was up the front of the bus, and again, sure, this could have been choreographed, right, that Lochnan was up the front of the bus, and someone said about reverse and back, and Lochnan said, hold it, there won't be a step back today, or something to that effect. I mean, Stephen Jim McInerney got out, lifted the gate off his hinges, and the bus drove forward. And again, you just wondered, was he down there the night before, put the lock on the gate? But it was just, you know, it's little things that you remember, and other more important things that you maybe forget 25 years on. And that's what I remember of the morning of the game. I have no recollection of Niall Quinn or any of that stuff, or Jack Charlton happening in the airport. Still, I remember, all right, they were there, but other than that, it's just a fuzz at this stage.
The we've lots of love coming in for you lads, by the way. I'm a Mayo man, and listening to Anthony Daly, the hair is standing on my head, says Ronan O'Grady on Twitter, and plenty more of those types of comments coming in as well. There's a lot of love for that, for the 2E and for that Clare team as well, and we haven't even really touched on the Offaly game. But I did want to, before we wrap it up, Anthony, ask you, like, I mean, because there was 95 and 97 and all the close misses that were went before it and in between it, I suppose, but is there any sense that it was an underachievement for that group?
Ah, well, Adrian, you know, I look at it, I tell you, like, everyone was on about 95, you know, the last few days, 6 days ago, I suppose 25 years ago, but, and I touched on 97 and one radio, local radio station, I said, look, we'll stick with 95. But for us and for Gerard, I suppose what was massive was to back it up and win another one. And if you look at what happened 2 years later, okay, we got caught following year by a very determined Limerick. We probably should have beaten them on the day, but Kieran's point, I suppose, would be the memorable. Oh, what a score and what a player. But look, we came out the following year, like, and we beat Cork and we beat Tip and we beat Kilkenny and we beat Tip again. And you know, if you look back on 95, maybe they'd say we beat Cork and we beat Limerick, and then no great traditional rivals of ours, Galway or Offaly. We probably have cheered for them in the past, if you know what I mean, because they were like ourselves, underdogs. But we beat them all, I suppose, by the end of 97. So people will point to 98 and all the drama that went on there, Adrian, and say we should have got a third. And I often think 99 was one that got away more than 98. 98 kind of just happened, and what could we do, really? So look, no, absolutely no regrets. I haven't anyway. Lots of clear people have about 98 and, you know, the whole circumstances. But I haven't. Like, as I said, I came up in an era where, God, the thought of winning a National League would have been a highlight of an inter-county career for me. So to get what we got, three Munsters and two All-Irelands, I mean, it was dream come true stuff.
And is it funny, I was listening to a bunch of Celtic legends on a few weeks ago, Neil Lennon and Cillian Petroff, Chris Sutton, and they were talking about the bond that existed with that team when they were there, and everybody remembers the team of that era. And I wondered about, just, you mentioned, Anthony, at the top about keeping in contact and getting the suits and missing out of all the years to have missed out on it. But as a group, do you stay in touch? Do you look out for each other? Because I know, obviously, there's been, well, plenty of you got on to the management route, and it's not always easy to stay friends in that regard, obviously.
Yeah, and look, there's been a couple of things that have been profiled maybe this year a little bit, but look, no, we're a great group, Adrian. We get together every Christmas, like probably the end of November. We go off and we play golf, and Jamesy and a few more take the golf serious, and then the evening crew usually land on around dinner time, and we've done nearly every town in Ireland at this stage, you know. So, and that has gone on. We used to have a summer one as well, but I suppose, fellas, the numbers were dwindling a bit for the summer one because we all kind of found ourselves involved in various forms of management and things like that. So, we've remained very, very close. And funny enough, we had a few plans this year for maybe a couple of nights in Dublin and maybe a night abroad or something, a night or two, maybe a couple of fundraisers and backing up Brian Lohan and his new management as well, that we could maybe fundraise for them on the back of the 25-year story. And God, like, the meetings were just like as if we were back at square one again, like, you know, it's like the Tuesday morning after the All-Ireland, like, and, you know, so, no, lads are very tight. And we went over to Mike Mack's pub actually last week on the anniversary for a local radio show for Scariff Bay, and Mike and Jim McInerney and Liam Doyle were there, and sure, you could have said all night, thank God I just drank water and got out of there, because I'd say it might have been dangerous. But I don't think with the quarantines that are in place at the moment, we could have quite had a full batch of us there together. But brilliant. Every time we meet, it's just like you met him, and you mightn't have met him in a year and a half, do you know, but you like as if you met him 10 minutes earlier.
Yeah, lads, I could chat for another hour. It's been an absolute pleasure spending the last 30 minutes or so in your company and picking over the events in 1995. There was so much more to talk about, but we've run out of time. Anthony, Jamesy, thanks a million for taking the time.
Cheers, Adrian.
Thanks, Adrian.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.